Well, welcome everybody, and thank you for joining our webcast today. As you know, the Association of Value-Based Cancer Care is responsible for information and dialogue in our ecosystem across all stakeholder groups. This ensures that patients will win on access and quality. We need to constantly improve and change our tactics and our deliverables in cancer care. This is why we hold these webcasts. This is why you're dialing in. We have key opinion leaders, the influencers, the important decision makers who are driving change in our ecosystem. Please join us, participate, ask questions, and offer your voice too. It's hugely important. So thank you for joining. We look forward to participating with you more. Stay safe. Thank you. Well, good morning. Bert Zweigeneff here with Jason Slotnick. And actually, Jason, besides being a moderator of today's panel, which was unbelievable, Jason's also a longtime co-chair of the Association for Value-Based Cancer Care. But today's panel, Jason, was on Washington and public policy. And you had John O'Brien, the former senior director to the U.S. Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, wonderful person. You had Ted Okun, who's executive director of COA, the Community Oncology Alliance. And you had Deborah Kamen, RN, PhD, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the American Society of Clinical Oncology, also known as ASCO. And I know you covered an awful lot of topics today, and you know we try to keep these webcasts to 1 hour, which you did a magnificent job. But I got to tell you, overwhelmingly, I'm sure people could have listened for several more hours because there's so much to cover and so much is happening in Washington. What was your take, Jason, of this morning's conversation?
Well, thank you very much, Bert. Appreciate the opportunity to moderate this morning, to do this podcast, and of course to work with you at AVBCC over these years. The Value-Based Cancer Care has been very generous to me. I appreciate all of its support and look forward to many more informative sessions, such as this morning. I thought this morning was a very good overview. Like you said, there is a lot going on, but most of it that is going on is not really going to happen. And as you always say, it's important to understand what's real and what's not that comes out of Washington, because without doing so, organizations may misplan, may make bad decisions on their future, on what they're going to do, how they're going to treat patients, how they're going to conduct business. Prime example of that this morning was the International Pricing Index, Most Favored Nation. That was a policy talked about in an executive order that is unlikely to go anywhere. So it was a good discussion. As you said, we could have talked about any one of those for many more hours. And I just hope that those that partook got a good understanding and are now more discernible listeners of what comes out of Washington.
All right. So let's go over a couple of things that I thought was rather interesting today, and I love the agenda you ran. Let's just go to 340B programs. I historically have always felt they were untouchable. No one has a bleeding heart for pharma. I think we heard that today. And they're the ones who everyone believes is being the most impacted by this 340B program, because they're giving really unbelievable discounts. And we heard Ted, who finally got to see what some of those discounts look like. He was grossly surprised, I think might have been some of the words he used. But with this change in reimbursement, what do you think is this going to happen? Is this something that will level the playing field between the community oncologists or other hospital providers that are for-profit that don't have access to this 340B program? And would it, at the end of the day, which we heard today, actually take away the inflation that patients are paying when they have to do copays and deductibles, which are not obviously passed on through the price allocation when the DSH or the disproportionate share hospital receives that 340B discount?
Thanks, Bert. The 340B program is a very controversial program because, like, unfortunately, many other federal programs in and outside of healthcare, it has been and continues to be abused. Before commenting on some of the comments from this morning, I just want to quickly remind everybody what the intent of the 340B program was. And the 340B program fashions itself as sort of the Robin Hood, where you were robbing from the rich to pay for the poor. Mm-hmm. It was created by Congress, that's the statutory right, to allow covered entities to, I think the direct statute language is to spread scarce resources to care for and cover the cost of providing that care to those that are either underinsured or uninsured. And so that's a noble gesture. That's a noble public policy that Congress should have taken and did. And unfortunately, over time, that policy has been abused. It's been abused in one of a couple different ways. Number one, some in the political system have added to the entities, have expanded the amount of entities that are eligible for that lower price to the point now where some would argue that the exception has now swallowed the rule. Number two is that the way the formula is constructed to drive that price down has now created a situation where you have so many drugs that are at penny pricing. The formula was put into place in 1992. At that point, it wasn't necessarily within the vision of Congress to understand that some of the drugs that were even used back then, some, you know, generic drugs now or generic drugs that became generic shortly after the rule, would become so cheap and thereby feeding the distortion.
Right.
So the program in and of itself is a good idea. The distortions and the abuses is what are the problems. Mm-hmm. And as Ted mentioned this morning, his organization, COA, is trying to use the concept of the discount follows the patient as a attempt to solve the distortion while keeping the spirit of the program alive.
Intact, right?
And I objectively, right, and I objectively agree with that as a concept where we should have a system that provides health care to everybody, even those that are uninsured or underinsured, and they shouldn't have to go bankrupt as a result. And that's sort of what the 340B program is, but we need a governor on how it could be abused. So if the discount follows the person, that is a reasonable, at least initial way to solve the abuse problem. I'm sure over time others will figure out how to abuse it, and then we'll have to regulate and legislate again. But the 340B program is ripe for retooling, and right. I sincerely hope that it is retooled in the future. And then again, one final comment. Ted is 100% correct. I mean, I know that as somebody who represents manufacturers, that, and you know this too, the first thing a manufacturer does is they get a payer mix. They understand where their patients are going to get the therapy. They understand how much that payer is going to pay for that therapy or buy it, and they set the price accordingly. And if you have a large 340B patient population out the door at launch, you're going to add more to your drug price because the gross to net is going to be impacted. So it's a problem that is not limited to just that area of healthcare. It distorts the entire system, if you will, because it causes higher launch prices, it causes higher health insurance premiums, and a lot of cross-subsidizing by everybody because of the abuse of that program.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point to try to establish what was the intent. I think I've used something I learned from you many times. It's the law of unintended consequences that seems to come out of Washington.
Right.
You know, do good policy, but not fully thought through. ASP can be considered another one of those flawed fixes to transparency, which probably didn't help out either. So let's go over to one of the things that I think you wanted to talk about, we didn't hit on, was payment changes and coding for the 505B2 drugs. Why don't you give us a little insight into what was the intent of that? And what do you think could be the impact if there's proposed changes go through?
Wow. I mean, talk about a topic that could take all day. That is
sure.
Certainly one of them. 505B2 is a very significant proposal that came out of CMS. It represents a dramatic change of its policy. But to fully appreciate the change, I need to give a little bit of background as to what the current rules are so people can understand the magnitude of this change.
Please do that.
As you mentioned, average sales price is a price that was a pricing, a reimbursement mechanism that Congress established back in 2003 in a piece of legislation called the Medicare Modernization Act. It was a direct reaction to the abuses of average wholesale price. So here's yet another example of a government program that was abused and then needed to be fixed. The intent of average sales price was to cure the abuses of average wholesale price, which is that the government should get the benefit of the discounts and the chargebacks and all the rebating that goes in the channel between the wholesaler and the physician, such that all of those prices, all of those discounts, rebates, if you will, are to be accumulated and calculated by the manufacturer, and the manufacturer submits it to the government, and the government establishes the average sales price. And that sales price is then the basis of the reimbursement for the physician. But Congress also wrote rules about, well, how does CMS calculate that average sales price? We have all different types of drugs in commerce. We have generic drugs. We have drugs without generics. We have these drugs in the middle called 505B2. So Congress defined it in law. And Congress said, well, if it's a single source drug, by law, CMS must reimburse based upon that product's ASP. If it's a generic drug, multi-source drug, if you will, CMS is entitled to blend the NDCs of all the generic drugs as listed by the FDA, as determined by the FDA, to create one ASP. So in 2006, when ASP was started, CMS made the determination by policy that 505B2 drugs are single-source drugs, and therefore are entitled to get reimbursed based upon its own ASP, and to effectuate that policy, assigned unique HCPCS codes for 505B2 drugs. And over the years, CMS quotes statistics that shows the tremendous growth in 505B2 drugs. And CMS has also noticed that those drugs have, some of them have generic active pharmaceutical ingredients in them that are genericized, yet are getting the benefit of not being considered generic for reimbursement purposes and are launching at a significantly higher price, and the government is overpaying. So that's the background to the proposal that I'm about to explain, which now simply states that CMS wants to end that, that CMS is changing its analysis, and when it receives a HCPCS coding application, it's going to look at the active pharmaceutical ingredient.
Right.
If the active pharmaceutical ingredient, the API, is already genericized, it's going to treat it as a multi-source drug and blend it. And we have a lot of cancer drugs that fit that bill. A lot of cancer drugs that have been reformulated, a lot of cancer drugs that have gone through 505B2, that on its face are like, oh my God, we're going to be bundled in with a generic drug. Gemcitabine, erisotinin, all of those older chemos, and our reimbursement rate is going to go down. Now, CMS does respond to those concerns and says, well, it's not dispositive if the API is genericized. If you have a longer acting release or some other, if you will, innovations, we'll take that into consideration. And it's quite possible that although your API is genericized, we would still assign you as a single source drug. So that's a long answer. Unfortunately, it had to be that way to fully appreciate the policy shift here. At the end of the day, we don't really understand how many drugs this will, how many it'll impact.
Several drugs, right. There's more.
Several drugs, for sure.
A couple of handfuls.
They wouldn't have proposed it.
There's a couple of handfuls.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have proposed it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We got to keep our eye on that one. But, you know, it kind of leads me down the road, Jason, of thinking that the government involvement in setting price versus a free market setting the price is really what leads to these distortions. If everyone under the government program was managed by a commercial entity, non-government entity, I'm sure they would find, they would seek the market equilibrium that free markets usually get. But when they become highly regulated and we have these tiers of distortion, it creates some problems. So more on this. I mean, and, you know, you have to think the current administration looks to be more pro-industry solving the problems in collaboration with government. But I think
the other party,
if they came in, might be more. Well, I kind of worry about it from two perspectives. One is I kind of understand the devil that's in the White House today. But if the new devil comes in, I think they're going to have a much different approach to want to expand the reach of government in these areas. And so I, as a economist, my personal opinion is free markets seem to find the right price. Government enforcement and markets seem to distort the price, and we have several inequalities in pricing or patients being impacted. But go ahead, Jason, let's hear your comments on that.
My reaction to this, and what CMS in some of its positioning says, that this actually, they believe, will stimulate innovation.
Right.
Because it'll force more monies into different. And my pushback will be that that is actually the complete opposite.
Yes.
Right, that the 505B2 pathway really appreciates the fact that innovation in the drug discovery space is incremental. You don't go from leeches to genetic therapy overnight, right? It's been 100 years. You look at each generation, we went from chemo to monoclonal antibodies, immunotherapy, gene therapy, right? This took a long time. Innovation is incremental. And so there's a significant lack of education on that piece. And then secondly, and equally important, is your point about balancing regulation with innovation. And my point to the government is as follows. Is you've already authorized Medicare Advantage plans to create formularies. You've already allowed them to not only create a formulary within Part B as in boy, but across Part B and Part D as in David. It looks like a commercial plan.
Right.
So why have this policy? Let the plans decide through formularies whether that 505B2 new formulation is worth it. That the underlying concept here is that competition, which is really the only concept that achieves the important balance of reducing prices while stimulating innovation, must be the number one governor here, because it's the tried and truest way to move us forward in healthcare. Mm-hmm. That allowing for competition has been the truest test. And look,
yes,
what happens when you don't allow competition. As Ted said this morning, the PBM is the biggest issue. Why? Because there's no more competition there. They allowed the government the vertical integration. They allowed for massive consolidation on the payer side, believing that bigger with lower prices, and it has not worked.
Right.
Rather, lack of competition has increased the distortion of the prices
right
in the channel. And so all you need to do is take that to its next logical extension. If you have a government payer, Medicare for all of these other where larger is better concept, what's going to come with that is significantly more distortion in price and fraud and abuse. And we all know, we remember the stories of the Pentagon paying $500 for a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
What's not to think that that wouldn't occur in healthcare?
Yep. Well, it probably has occurred. Let's just go back to it. Look, we could spend hours on this one, but we could spend an hour on the next one I want to give you. We didn't really get a chance to talk about rebates today and transparency and trying to bring that back. And as you and I both know Doug Long very well, and we're kind of jealous of him, right? Because he's got all the data, right? But the $470 billion drug spend is really super inflated by the $170 billion in rebates and other discounts. And if you think about most manufacturers, I won't name who, I had a conversation with the president of one of the oncology companies that you and I both know very well. Of every dollar they bill, they only get to collect 25 cents. So doesn't that just speak clouds to, and I'm using clouds, not mountains, because you can't see through clouds, what the problem is here? The price at the pump ain't what you pay. And this has created distortions the PBMs have gotten big and they have monopolized the supply channel to their own benefit. You know, dribble down economics and what it is. Do you think the rebate discussion comes back, Jason? You know, I always look to you to separate the noise of Washington from the reality. But isn't this the biggest problem that we have today? Is that these free markets are distorted. And to your point, the manufacturers have to go to market knowing this $170 billion I have to add to pricing because of all the interference in the free markets. So would we see the rebate discussion or the transparency come back to the marketplace, no matter who's in the White House?
The rebate issue is a significant issue, as we discussed on the panel webinar this morning, and even a certain aspect of that within the 340B program. And the history here is important as well, like I said, on the 505B2 issue. The rebate discussion, the gross-to-net bubble, as the rebate discussion evolved into, started a couple of years ago when Congress was investigating why the EpiPen was so expensive. Mm-hmm. And the CEO of Mylan was testifying, and she said, while looking at her father, who's a senator from West Virginia, she said, yep. While my prices are very high, my gross to net remains the same because I'm giving away a lot of money in the channel through rebates and discounts.
I remember that slide. She was selling a $600 product for $300, according to the slide behind her.
Correct, exactly. And that really stimulated the discussion around gross to net. Of course, the pharmaceutical industry jumped on it in a positive way. The PBMs jumped on it as well and saying that it really, the rebates is what keeps down premiums. This administration has tried, and as you heard a little bit this morning with Ted mentioning the rebate rule, has tried to create greater transparency through that channel on rebating. And to no avail, because the health plans came in and they fought it not only on transparency grounds, but they were more successful in fighting it as a result of their assertions that if you move and lose rebates, you would increase premiums.
Correct.
Now, my response to them would have been, okay, sure, go ahead, increase your premiums, you'll lose patients, right? It goes back to that competition argument.
Exactly.
Now, right, they may all increase their premiums, right? And then you have an antitrust issue, right? We've all come to a corner and seen four gas stations all with the same price on each corner, right? Are they in cahoots? No, they're, you know, competing within, but it would stabilize. There is this competitive force that would force it down, number one. Number two, which Medicare beneficiary, if you ask them, would not make the following trade? Would you take a 20% coinsurance at $100,000 at the point of sale versus an extra $10 a month in premiums to spread the risk across the entire insurance design? Mm-hmm. Everybody would take the extra $120 a year versus 20% coinsurance that
Absolutely.
The increased premiums would cover, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the rebate distortion. So I think we could have a more intelligent, unfortunately, right? These don't occur in the age of Twitter and soundbites and bitter partisanship. But there is a way, if we go back again to the fundamentals of what is insurance, to really start teasing this out, eliminate the rebating, create greater transparency, create greater and better insurance benefit design. I know you mentioned that in the next week or so, Value-Based Cancer is hosting a webinar on insurance design. To me, that's where we need to go. We need to go into an insurance benefit design that really incentivizes spreading risk, incentivizes preventative care and mental health and all these other issues, wellness, that transitions our healthcare system from a sickness insurance program to a healthcare wellness insurance program. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that kind of major change is just going to be so hard to do. But without changing the entire system, that's the only way, I think, to change the rebate piece, because mm-hmm. doing the rebate in isolation is not going to work.
Yeah. And that's why fundamental reform is a much more complex problem. we talked about today, the 502Bs, the 340B program, the federal supply schedule, the AWP, the WAC, ASP. I mean, it's just, we have to dig in and we have to do it. But let's be fair, Jason, the PBMs have co-conspirators, and they are the insurance companies. And a lot of that money actually—
You mean their owners? Up,
yeah. Well, you know, some are, some PBM, right? Yeah. You know, they have completely verticalized. But a health plan might tell the PBM that of that $170 billion inflation, the extraction of those rebate dollars, we get 90% back. So, of course, the insurance industry wants to fight against that because they are the primary recipients of that money. I was politely asked not to participate in discussion at PCMA, which is the PBM organization in Washington, the lobbying group, because I kept calling it the mafia money. And I got a call from one of their executives and said, hey, could you, Bert, could you lighten that up a little bit? You know. So I said, all right, so it's the end of the table payments. He said to me, come on now. I said, all right, look, I'll try to be fairer, but look, the system is broken. And this is going back now 10 years, and you know, you and I have known each other for a long, long time. I really hope that we get to this and we get to restructuring. So with all that, Jason, I want to thank you again for your time, your insights. You're one of the big thought leaders. I hope you become a better influencer in what happens out there for change. I hope we all do. Again, thank you. I'm part of ABBCC for your time and your insights, and we look to have you back again.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. And one last final message, when you talk about insurance benefit design, you bring this up. I wish I had the time, but to me, the three biggest healthcare reforms are all free, Bert. All free, which is number one, stop smoking. Mm-hmm. Number two, eating healthy. And number three, get up and move. Walk, push-ups, sit-ups, exercise. It's free. The three most important impacts on healthcare as a population are all free. They're all free. I want to write an article that says, healthcare reform we can all afford. Those Great. Three simple things are free. So it's amazing how, right, it's not being done. But I appreciate the soapbox this morning. As you mentioned, it's much appreciated. We've known each other a long time. We always have a good time together. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to many more.
Yeah, listen, let's be honest. When you put the book in to run these discussions, someone like John O'Brien, Ted Okun, or Deborah Kamen, you can't lose, right? Thanks to your panel today. I thought that was great. All right. Well, listen, have a great day, and let's continue the fight. We live to fight another day. Well, gee, that was just great today, and thank you for joining. Thank you to our faculty and our panelists. As usual, great content, and the sharing of information, hugely important if we are going to improve access and the quality of care that we're responsible for delivering along with change in this ecosystem. Like today, there'll be other and future webcasts. We cover all topics and all stakeholders. Stay tuned. Also, we post this on our website. It's very important that you can dial down and share with your colleagues. So we encourage you to do that. Additionally, if any of you have any comments, send them in through our website. If anyone would like to participate in speaking or has some other ideas, please share them with us. That's our mission. Thank you for joining Talk Again.